is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, April 22nd, 2024, and today will be better than yesterday. Taylor Schwenk is working on this Sunday evening taping from the Schwenk Studios back in Connecticut. I'm Buster, only working from Atlanta, where Taylor fans are really excited to see us, see Sunday Night Baseball folks, to see me. I know that because when I was going through the bowels of the field here at Truist Park, a fan yelled out and said, "Hey, Mr. Costas, Mr. Costas, I love your work."
Nuh-uh. Oh, my God. What did you say? Did you just wave and say thank you?
I said thank you and just kept walking.
Oh, man. Some guy, he's telling all his buddies in the group chat right now, "Oh, I said what's up to Bob Costas." That is amazing.
I know. You know, I get confused with Tim a lot. People would always, transpose Tim and I and say things, but that's the first Bob Costas I've ever got.
Okay.
You know?
That is hilarious.
And quite an honor, you know? When Bob Costas, his career certainly has been awesome. So, yeah, Mr. Costas. I would not be surprised if my partner Liz calls me that because I told her that and she just laughed and laughed in my face. All right. On Sunday Night Baseball, we had the Rangers and we had the Braves. And one of the cool things that we've been doing the last few weeks is that Eduardo Perez has been picking out a player and getting custom shoes built for them. And tonight's custom shoe player was Adolis Garcia, okay, whose shoes were designed in part by his wife. They had a map of Cuba with a heart in the middle of it because that's where Garcia was born and raised, in a province there. Well, guess what happened in the top of the eighth inning with the Rangers leading 4-3.
And the pitch. Swing and a ball drilled right field. This one's got a chance on its way and gone. The opposite way for Adolis Garcia, and the Rangers get some insurance. And it is now 6-3 for Garcia, his sixth of the year.
And the Rangers are going to win the game 6-4 to salvage the final game of this three-game series. You're going to hear me talk with Carl Ravitch right after this game. He talked about the shoe game that Adolis Garcia had. We talked about where the Braves stand, and he also has some thoughts and memories about Howie Schwab, who passed away over the weekend. Dodgers and Mets in Dodger Stadium. The Mets won the first two games of this series, but Shohei Ohtani got it done in the bottom of the third.
Nothing on the count on Ohtani. Lux leaning off first, thought about going, stays. And Ohtani turns on a ball, deep right field, into the pavilion, halfway up the pavilion. Nobody moved. They just watched it fly. A two-run homer for Shohei Ohtani. It's 2-0 Dodgers.
That from AM 570 LA Sports. That home run for Ohtani was number 176 of his career. That means he broke Hideki Matsui's record for any player born in Japan. Tyler Glasnow pitched outstanding in this game. The final score, 10-0. Orioles and Royals in Kansas City. This is what happened in the top of the third inning.
Couser gets into one to right. Back goes Renfro, the right fielder. He's at the track. He's looking up, and that's a splash. A home run for Couser to right center. And the Orioles take a 1-0 lead in the third. Westbrook drives this to left center. Back that one goes. Back to the track, and that baby's gone. Back to back, Couser and Westbrook, and it's 2-0 Baltimore.
Yeah, the Royals will never recover. Baltimore wins 5-0. On this Sunday, WBAL with that sound. Hot Ticket is brought to you by Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN. Get great deals on the hottest tickets. Experience it live. You know what a hot ticket is now? How about in Cleveland? Because the Guardians, best record in baseball. They faced the A's. They had a great series. Josh Naylor got it done in the bottom of the seventh on Sunday.
Swung and yanked to right field. Base hit. Gets down. It'll go to the wall. Into scores Naylor. Into scores Rocchio. Right behind him, Jimenez. A three-run double. Down the right field line. Josh Naylor does it again.
Yeah, it was Tom Hamilton, WTAM 1100. The Phillies took care of business against the White Sox, beating the worst team in baseball with help on Sunday from Trey Turner.
Runner does go. The pitch swung on and missed. Throw down to second. Harper gets himself in a rundown. Now Turner starting to break for the plate. He's coming home. Sosa's throw is wild. And Harper now scampers to second. Maldonado fires in. It's late. Phillies tie the game as Harper gets himself into the rundown. And Trey Turner draws the errant throw. It's 2-2.
That from Sports Radio 94 WIP. It feels like we need to have Benny Hill music whenever we have a White Sox highlight. That's just there's no getting around that. As usual, a lot of injuries with star players from over the weekend. The Red Sox placed Tristan Casas on the injured list with a strained left rib. Alex Cora told reporters that he is concerned this may be an extended absence for a guy who hits right in the middle of the Boston lineup. The Diamondbacks' Merrill Kelly was scratched from his start against the Giants after experiencing some shoulder discomfort. And the Brewers placed left-handed pitcher D.L. Hall on the 15-day injured list because of a knee sprain that happened when he was pursuing a bunt in Saturday's game. Taylor, what else you got?
Buster, let's turn things around after all that sad injury news. Can we talk about who we're having on the podcast on Wednesday's show?
Loving it.
Ooh,
that's right.
Buster.
Guy's going to go down in history. He's arguably the greatest player ever.
Oh, man. His name's Mike Trout. He's going to be joining the Baseball Tonight podcast. Buster is going to conduct a masterful interview. Not the first time he's been on the podcast either. So I think he's officially a friend of the show. He's been on possibly more than once.
Oh, yeah. He's been on. It's kind of an annual event that we just took a respite from last year because he got hurt and he didn't play. And I know him well enough to know that he doesn't want to talk when he's hurt. He feels like he's speaking out of place, but he's off to a great start. And he's going to be joining the pod on Tuesday.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So we're going to have a special clown car edition. This is actually being done in the lobby of the hotel where we're staying at the Battery right after the Braves game against the Texas Rangers. Texas wins 6-4. And I'd say this, Carl, nobody in the world is more happy than Eduardo Perez because his shoe game paid off.
It's working, yeah. He gave Adolis Garcia some shoes. He gave Freddie Freeman shoes last week. He got a double, which he hadn't had many of, if almost any. And then Garcia hits a double and a homer. And then conveniently at the end of our broadcast, we were going to replay the shoes and the Garcia good stuff. We were going to leave out the fact that he dropped a high fly because they were offensive shoes. And the offensive shoes really did pay off tonight for him.
All right, what were some things that stuck out to you this weekend about the Texas Rangers just being around the team?
Resiliency. The fact that they're, you know, banged up like every team in baseball. I thought that the idea that Lowe came back was big. You know, he had a couple of hits, and they slowly get pieces back. The good news for them is nobody's pulled away in their division, so that's huge. Bochy's a genius, again, when it comes to managing a bullpen. I thought Sunday night was interesting. Robertson got two big outs, and you're like, well, he's going to get through the next guy, and he bring in Kirby Yates, and Yates was unbelievable and did exactly what he needed to. Look, they're a really good team. I was happy to see Carter get a hit because he needs to. I think the two rookies are trying to find their way, but that's a good team. They are where they should be. Were they plus 1800 on ESPN bet to get back and win a World Series? They can do it. They're really good.
Yeah, the young players and their progress early in the year is something that really jumped out to me. I talked to Marcus Semien before the game, and he mentioned that what he's told these guys is, look, every team is going to be game planning.
Yeah.
And the next team they play will pitch them the way the Atlanta Braves did over the weekend. And yet, despite the fact that Carter especially struggled against lefties, Langford really hasn't hit for power, I don't get a sense of any impatience building among the Rangers about what the young players are doing.
Yeah, I think a World Series helps with that. I think it buys you some time. You know, it is interesting. This game, as you know, is so psychological. They're so mental about being up or being down and trying to maintain sort of a even keel. When you think about a guy like Carter, who came up late last year and was a house of fire, was unbelievable. They don't win a World Series without him. There's no question about it. But then you start out this season, you know, you're 23 games in, and he hasn't really done much, sitting below 200, I believe, coming into the night. I do think a baseball player, and I'm not saying Evan Carter, but a baseball player would be inclined to maybe start to wonder, like, was last year real? Is this year more real? Like, who am I? What am I? And I think the home run tonight was huge for him. They have incredible faith in him. But I think even Boach suggested, like, you know, I can see this is the way this game works. You fail 7 out of 10 times. So that stuff creeps into your mind, and I was happy to see him get a hit, get a homer.
On the Braves side, impressions, takeaways from this weekend?
They probably have the best three catchers you can have. I mean, Trump was really good tonight with the throws that he made. He's actually hit the ball a little bit. Darno came in and flew out, but having Darno, Murphy when he gets back, and Trump is tremendous. Look, I don't think Riley and Olson, and the numbers will back it up, are killing it. You know, they're being carried by Arcia's batting average and Ozuna's power. That's it. To have won 6 in a row into tonight, not gotten much from those two guys, that's a shock. Now, they don't seem too overly, like, blown up by Strider's injury. There's a great faith in this organization, top to bottom, that we'll figure it out. We have a lot of talent, but if we have to, we'll get a piece that can spell Strider. That may have been Vine's last start for a bit. Maybe they go back and bring Elder up, but they're not worried about any of that stuff that I think the fans would be worried about.
Yeah, Darius Vines is in the 5th spot in the Braves rotation, as we talked about on the broadcast. That is a tenuous spot to be, because there's so few pitchers that are on the Braves staff that have options to be sent back to the minors. There's only one reliever, that's Dylan Lee, who can be sent back to the minors. So the Braves really are using that 5th spot in their rotation to rotate guys up and down. And if you pitch great, you're probably staying in the 5th spot. And if you don't, they may use that spot for a reliever for a day or two and then call up somebody like Bryce Elder. One of the cool stories that will stick with me from this weekend, the one that Travis Darno, that went before his 3-homer game on Friday, his father, who lost his father, Travis's grandfather, last fall, was feeling bad about his dad passing away. It's been really tough for him. And so Lance Darno spoke out to the grandfather and said, please give us some sign. You know, can you please give us some sign? And that's the night that Darno hit 3 home runs. And Travis, when I talked to him about it before the game, he just talked about, man, just incredible to have that, and the feeling that they connected with their grandfather over the weekend and on that big night, which, by the way, was his grandfather's birthday. For me, and I agree with you about what the Braves said, Brian Snicker kept on talking about how these guys don't panic. They lost Ronald Acuna Jr. in 2021 to a knee injury, and they won the World Series. So, yes, they've lost Spencer Strider. Matt Olson is in a funk right now. Austin Riley really hasn't gotten off to a good start. Ronald Acuna Jr. has one home run, and yet, what, they started the day in first place?
Yeah, first place by a pretty good distance, you know. And the other thing that's going on in their division, you get teams that are actually playing good baseball. Philly's been really good, and the Mets have been really good. But, look, if you told me that they were going to lose the guys they did and win 6 games in a row into this game, I would have been surprised. I mean, as good as they are, I still wouldn't have believed it. I didn't know that they had the pitching. If you're going to lose Strider, and Fried has not been good at all, to have a win streak like that and to have a lead in that division. Look, we went through the 90s. We've seen the Braves win division after division. We've seen this before. Question's going to be, can they get multiple series? Can that be different than what we saw with Maddux and Glavine and Smoltz? And the infinite belief in themselves, the faith that they have, the idea that the regulars play every day. I mean, you think about the ninth inning tonight. D'Arnaud got the day off. I get it. And then he pinch hits. So he's sitting there on the bench. Adam Duvall comes in off the bench to pinch hit. Like, it's so hard to get playing time on a team where everybody expects to play every single day. Hard to keep people sharp. The organizational depth at the major league level is so solid that replacing a guy like Strider, you don't do. But they have so many Band-Aids that are – they're like Flex Seal. You know? It's not just a Band-Aid. It's a Band-Aid that prevents any leaking. And they've been able to weather the storm here early. And you get the sense that this is going to be how it is for them this entire season. Not that they're going to get more injuries, that they have the ability to withstand it and succeed.
So I never got a chance to really work with Howie Schwab, okay? Yeah. He was someone who I met a couple of times, but there weren't any shows. There wasn't a lot of crossover.
Right.
But I know you got to know him.
Yeah. I worked a lot with Howie during my SportsCenter days. I've been there 31 years in May. And Howie was, you know, when I got to ESPN from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, you figured you're going to this place where everybody knows everything about sports. And you get there and you realize that most people have niches where they know about basketball, they know about football, they know about hockey, they know about baseball. Howie Schwab knew about everything, and he knew everything about everything, which of course led to the show Stump the Schwab, where you couldn't get some type of trivia or fact by him. He knew it all. You know, and on a level of respect and reverence of people that I've worked with over the years, there have been many unique people. He had such a unique skill and a unique talent that it was hard to believe. Like, nobody should know this much about multiple things, and he did. And whether I was working with Dick Vitale and he was sending him emails, or Dickie V would take out an entire, you know, pamphlet of papers that was produced, that was literally written by Howie Schwab. I mean, he wrote everything, and those were the notes that Dickie V used for years. So he was the backbone of so many people. He was the backbone of the network when it came to research, and a guy we all respected, loved, and looked up to. And it's sad to see that he's passed.
Thanks, Carl.
My pleasure. Anytime.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. Sarah, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing great. I should say that also is when I list your credentials that you generate a lot of stats and information for Sunday Night Baseball. So you're in the middle of our conversations on Thursday, and I must say that Eduardo Perez is pulling off the shoe thing with excellent success rate. I mean, if you can pick a guy to do a custom shoe for and he hits a home run, that's pretty impressive.
I mean, I'm almost worried. Like, what if that doesn't happen next week? What if the batting average is slugging for Eduardo on all this goes down? But in all honesty, it's been so cool to see it happen. As you said, we have our meetings on Thursday. And to go from the first time this was mentioned to now having this happen on air, having these shoes made for guys 2 weeks in a row, I mean, really, really cool. And I love seeing all of the focus on. I loved how Kirk Cousins met him on the broadcast when we showed out Michael Harris the second shoes. He mentioned how these are the guys that his kids gravitate towards. This is what they look for. And that is why we're showcasing this, to show who these guys are as people and really give and something else to look at beyond just the baseball card and the stats.
Okay, the fact that Eduardo is doing it, I'm a little bit relieved about that because he's a former player. So if they have like an offer with like three strikeouts, I don't think they look at it as much of a jinx as if I were to do it. Okay, like when I would do those, have done those first pitch interviews just before first pitch, I'm just like, man, I hope the guy has a good game because players are so superstitious.
But you did so well with those last year, didn't we? Have Trent Grisham as one of them in the postseason, and then you have what, two rounds in the wild card series? I mean, if I remember correctly, at least the first few you did, we had an amazing hit rate. So don't sell yourself short there.
Yeah, I know players. None of that. It's what have you done for me lately, Sarah? There's no question about it. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 176. So on Sunday, Shohei Ohtani, it is 176 career home run. That is the most home run by any Japanese-born player in the major league. He broke a tie at 175 with Hideki Matsui, and I don't have the games in front of me, but he got there a lot more quickly. It's just incredible to see. And my favorite side, I mean, that one is obviously really cool. My favorite side was his fifth home run with the Dodgers. He is now three away from passing his manager, Dave Roberts, for the most home runs by a Japanese-born player for the Dodgers. I remember going to a game in 2016, Japanese Heritage Night, and they had the mayor of Okinawa, Japan, where Dave Roberts is from, and I remember seeing him spend time with him before the game. But I'm not sure every baseball fan knows that Dave Roberts was born there. And I love this Shohei Ohtani. Gives us a reason to remind people.
Number two.
Number two is we'll go with 10. So on, I don't know what day, any day over the weekend, LA De La Cruz had a game. He hit his sixth home run, and he had three stolen bases to get to, at that point, 10 on the season. That gave him five home runs and 10 stolen bases in his first 20 games. The only other guy to have at least five home runs and 10 stolen bases in their first 20 games of a season since 1900 was Ken Williams, not the White Sox former GM, in 1922. So for LA De La Cruz to be doing something we have only seen once before and more than 100 years ago was absolutely incredible. And as I mentioned, home run and three stolen bases, he was the third youngest guy since 1900. Fourth youngest. And with home run and three stolen bases in the game, Fernando Tatis Jr. did it at a younger age, and Tim Raines did it twice at a younger age. Again, LA De La Cruz, just 22 years old, is off to a really exciting start this year.
Number one.
Number one is three. So I have the date right here on Friday. I know this one. Travis Arnold hit three home runs, and immediately I knew it was his second three-homer game. He had one with the Rays back in 2019 at Yankee Stadium. And so I was curious, how many catchers have multiple three-homer games? We know historically offense and catching not always going together, and obviously the guys who've been really good offensive catchers are some of the greatest we've ever seen. So, to that point, only two other players in baseball history have had two three-homer games while playing catcher: Gary Carter and Johnny Bench. When you talk about joining the ideal catcher list, those are two of the names you have to start with any time. It was really, really cool to have Travis Arnold on that list. And he was the fourth Braves catcher having three homer game. The last new was Dale Murphy, 1979, Bob Tillman in 1969, and Gene Oliver in 1966. They're just an incredible performance from Travis d'Arnaud, and really shows us yet again how deep the Braves are. Sean Murphy got hurt early in the year, and when thinking, oh no, this top to bottom lineup, will they be okay? Yeah, they have a guy who gets three runs in the game, who's going to be the backup now playing every day.
I talked to Sean Murphy, by the way, today, and it's the first time in his career he's been on an injured list. And, you know, he's making progress, he says. He's coming back from the oblique injury. But the number one thing that stuck with me is he's like, I am so bored. Like, he is just so bored watching other people play games as opposed to being out there. So a cool thing, you know, a cool story from Friday, and I was mentioning it to, you know, mentioning it to Carl about how this thing happened with Travis d'Arnaud and his father and his late grandfather, you know, where she really felt the, or he really felt the presence. His father asking for his grandfather to give some sign, and Travis d'Arnaud goes out and hits three home runs.
I mean, it's absolutely incredible. I say all the time, baseball is the best. And one of the reasons for that in my mind is how much it means to individual people and to families. And even if we haven't all had the opportunity to be major league players, I know every baseball fan can think of their own personal moment like that. Really, really bad day, something horrible happened in their family, what have you, and then they were able to forget about it for a little bit and focus on the game. So, I mean, when I first heard this story from you, I got chills, and it's so incredible and just so wonderful for that family that they will always be able to connect something not so heavy with this amazing experience.
That's exactly right. Sarah, thanks so much. Great to talk with you. We'll talk to you later in a week.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Jeff Passan covers baseball for ESPN. And Jeff, I referenced at the top of the show, Taylor's been having some tech problems tonight. So the bat crack for you, that was a huge, like that, I'm glad we got that.
I know. And I was on too. Like I swung at the right time. I was like, it was like a bottom hand swing too. I felt really good about it.
Nice. Well, you're doing a lot better than the Houston Astros, who have gotten off to a bad start. And I get asked the question, I'm sure you do too, in different shows that you do, are the Astros in trouble? What do you think?
I have been hesitant to say yes, Buster, because this is a team that's been to the American League Championship Series, you know, every year this decade and going back into the past decade. And so, you know, you're always waiting for the bottom to fall out from a team like that. And it just doesn't seem to, but man, this is a rough start for them. And here's the thing that concerns me as much as this 7-16 start they have. The next 3 weeks, they are playing a very good Chicago Cubs team. They're going to Mexico City, where God knows what the altitude is going to do to balls. It's like Coors Field on steroids there, and they're playing the Rockies there. And after that, they've got Cleveland, which is the best team in baseball record-wise right now. Seattle, which because of its starting pitching is always dangerous. The New York Yankees, who are right up there among the best teams in baseball. And the Detroit Tigers, who, because of their rotation and the best bullpen in baseball at this point, are really dangerous. They've got a gauntlet of a schedule coming up. And when you go into that with pitching that has really questionable health, even with Justin Verlander coming back, Christian Javier hits the injured list. They don't know when they're going to get Framber Valdez back. They've got other guys on the IL already right now.
Jose Urquidy, et cetera, et cetera.
Urquidy, Luis Garcia. The alarming part to me is that Jose Altuve has been incredible. Kyle Tucker has been himself. Jordan Alvarez has been a pretty close facsimile of himself. Jeremy Peña is hitting 350. It's not like they're getting a lack of production from their stars. And so when you factor that in and look at the record on top of that, I'm not going to count the Astros out yet because it would be a foolish thing to do. But I will say they are digging themselves a very big hole early on this season, and the next 3 weeks are no easier.
Yeah, the best thing that's happened, I think, for the Astros early in the year is that no other team has taken and run away.
That's exactly right. The American League West has been abject mediocrity so far.
Right. The Rangers at 12-11. If the Rangers played probably up to the part that they expect, you know, the level that they expect, and they could have been 8 or 9 games over where the Astros are. And I don't think they're going to recover unless they get some heroes develop on their pitching staff. Number one, Hunter Brown just has to pitch better.
Has to. He's been, this is a guy who the Astros, you know, were talking all spring with about an extension. And they believed, and I think still believe to an extent, that he's going to be a part of that rotation going forward. But when you have as many injuries as they've had, you need other guys to step up. And Ronel Blanco has been one of those guys, sort of an out of nowhere one. But you need more than just one guy to step up. And, you know, when it's the back end of the bullpen that was supposed to be their truest strength with Brian Abreu, Ryan Pressly, and Josh Hader, and all three of them have struggled so far over the course of the season's first 4 weeks. We're not in grim territory yet, but we're heading that way, and they got to turn things around.
Yeah, who would have imagined that we'd be talking about whether or not the Astros at some point this year might put Alex Bregman on the trade market? You know, that was not something that we would ever have thought about at the beginning of spring training. Real quick, an aside, give me 60 seconds of whether or not you think Justin Verlander actually is a shot at 300 wins. He's at 258 after coming back. You know, he looks good. You know, and I know he intends to pitch until he's 45. I think he's going to be like a Randy Johnson who's going to say, I'll do what it takes to get to that number. What do you think?
I hope the answer is yes, because I would love to see somebody. I love it whenever somebody can do what we believe to be impossible. And honestly, it feels like 300 wins in this era where you have not just 5-man rotations, but in some places 6-man rotations, and where the average start, is barely 5 innings to qualify for the win. The notion that somebody's going to throw well over 3,000 innings in his career and is going to win 300 games is not particularly realistic. But 42 away, I don't doubt the will of the man to do that. I just wonder if his body pitching the way he does is going to be able to hold up over that time.
Yeah. In the fall after he won the MVP, I asked him the question about, you know, how long do you want to pitch? He goes, you know, as long as Nolan Ryan did. Nolan Ryan, as you know, is his favorite player because he was able to maintain his velocity into his mid-40s, and that's what Justin is aiming to do. A team in the other direction, the New York Mets, they're playing great. I take full credit for it because in our hot takes that we did last week, I basically said the Mets are going to be in trouble competing not only this year but potentially for years to come because the development of the young pitching may not match where they are with their position players who are generally speaking middle-aged, and they are rolling. What do you think?
They really are, and it's been cool to watch, honestly, because, you know, at the beginning of this season, or really like coming into this season, the expectations for the Mets were not very high. They traded Verlander last year. They traded Max Scherzer last year. Internally, you know, Steve Cohen was suggesting to players that this year, 2024, is going to be something of a reset. But to see Luis Severino come out pitching the way that he has so far, I don't know how much you've seen of Jose Buteau, but the stuff is really good, man. It's really good. And he can throw all of his pitches for strikes, and he's got swing and miss stuff. And even a guy like Reed Garrett coming out of nowhere and has been arguably the best reliever in Major League Baseball this season, you know, 21 strikeouts in 10 and two-thirds innings. Like, you need performances like that. And I'm not going to sit here and say that, David Stearns, the new president of baseball operations, is like the ultimate bullpen whisperer. But one thing he did extraordinarily well with the Milwaukee Brewers during his time there is construct bullpens. And that was a strength of the Brewers and has been one of the reasons that they've been able to make the playoffs as much as they have on the payroll that they've had. And whether it is Garrett or Adam Ottavino or Drew Smith or having Edwin Diaz back, Brooks Raley, like the bullpen has been incredibly strong for them. You know, even Jorge Lopez, a guy who's found success in the past, but has had some rough patches. The Mets bullpen has more than made up for whatever deficiency that there was going into the season with the starting pitching. And look, you pitch well, you're going to win games. And they're doing this, you know, with Francisco Lindor struggling big time, with Brandon Nimmo not hitting for any power, with Francisco Alvarez now out 6 to 8 weeks. And that to me is going to be the biggest question going forward. How do they weather not having Alvarez back there? And what can Omar Narvaez do and Tomas Nito do in the meantime to help keep that pitching staff rolling the way it has?
Over the weekend, you get a chance to see the Orioles and the Royals, who I mean, I think right now they're probably two of the three or four best teams in the American League. What were some of your takeaways from that series?
The Orioles are really, really good. And I'm not going to toot my own horn here. I picked them to go to the World Series. Really, like, really awesome. Jeff, you picked a 101-win team to go to the World Series. Going out on a limb there. But, God, I mean, so today, Sunday, when we're recording this, the bottom of the Orioles lineup, bottom third, is Colton Cowser, who's OPSing like 1,200 plus and hit a 430-foot home run off Seth Lugo, who's been unhittable. Next at bat, his very good friend Jordan Westberg comes up. And this is a guy who got displaced from his position at second base when Jackson Holliday was called up, moved over to third base, and is OPSing over 1,000 himself, hits a 433-foot home run. And then there's Jackson Holliday at the end, the number one prospect in all of baseball, who has struggled certainly at the beginning of his career. But I have no doubt he is going to be really good. And, you know, after the game, I'm talking with Brandon Hyde, the Orioles manager, and I was like, do you realize you're hitting Colton Cowser seventh and Jordan Westberg eighth? And his response was, well, maybe not for long. But at that point, like, who gets dropped in the lineup? Gunnar Henderson hitting leadoff belongs there. Adley Rutschman hitting second belongs there. Ryan O'Hearn against right-handed pitching absolutely kills them. Anthony Santander, like, we can keep going on, Buster, and this lineup is absolutely unrelenting. They really are. And I understand that, you know, on Saturday against Cole Reagans, there were a lot of seeing eye hits and not a ton of exit velocity there. But you know what, man? You put the bat on the ball, things happen in 2024. Like, that is the name of the game. And against the guy in Reagans who's pumping 97 to 100 from the left side with a cutter, a slider, a change, and a curve, like five legitimate big league pitches. And they toyed with him to the point where was in the clubhouse before the game. And Vinny Pasquantino, who's a very, very funny guy, who's going to have a long media career when he's done punishing baseballs. Vinny says to Reagans, so did you sleep last night? And Cole sits there and he's like, yeah, eventually, but I had to go eat some Taco Bell first. That's how bad the start was. He had to wash it away with Taco Bell. That's what he needed to. That's what the Orioles lineup does to you. It makes you have a Taco Bell kind of night, Buster.
And I must say, when you watch, I mean, right from the get-go, Gunnar Henderson in the leadoff spot, every time I see him play, I'm like, holy crap, that guy's explosive in his movement.
He's so good. He's really, you know, he's really fast too. Like, he is a big guy. And it was interesting talking with him before the game and, you know, not just about his approach, but about how difficult baseball is. And this year he's making it look easy, right? Like, the natural talent is coming through. But remember, at the beginning of last season, he was bad. And, you know, he brought this up to contextualize what Jackson Holliday is going through right now, you know, starting his career off 1-for-30. It's not great. And I talked to Jackson a little bit, and he's, you know, he's keeping the right frame of mind about this, because this game, man, it can eat you alive. It can burrow its way into your head and set up shop and, you know, just live there. And Gunnar Henderson said the same thing that Jackson Holliday said. You just have to trust who you are, how you work, and what you've done. And it's why I think Jackson Holliday is going to be just fine. And all of the schadenfreude that people are having about his poor start, they're going to eat their words. And I hate the reactiveness and the overreactions that go on and are fomented by social media, because it's like, you know, laughing at a guy when he's down. It's never a great thing. You know, nobody is taking this worse than Jackson Holliday. And he's 20 years old and struggling probably for the first time in his life when it comes to baseball. But the scariest thing is that, you know, the Orioles are doing just fine without him. Imagine what they're going to be like when he starts playing like he normally does.
You know, I had a great conversation with Marcus Semien before the game tonight, and he mentioned to me about, you know, how young the Rangers are, despite the fact they're the defending champions. They have, what, eight players who are rookies this year have already played for them. And in talking with Langford and with talking with Carter, he said to both guys, look, during the regular season, everybody goes to school on what other teams do. And he mentioned, he said, you know, the Braves had pitched Langford in a certain way, or they did in this series, a lot of sweepers, a lot of stuff right at the edge of the outside corner or just off the edge. And he said to him, we're going to be playing Seattle. They're going to do the same thing. That's what's going to happen. Now you got to make adjustments. You know, it's interesting because Carter and Langford, watching them play, even though they haven't, neither guy is taken off and had a good start, they each and every day, they're kind of adding something. And that's so far about Jackson Holliday. I mean, he's getting beat by fastballs right down the middle. And it seems like teams are just saying, you know what, we're just going to throw as hard as we can, upper half of the strike zone, and we'll see if he can get it. And I agree with you. It's only a matter of time before he adjusts. But it's a different type of struggle early on than, say, a Langford or a Carter.
Yeah, it's a lot easier. Well, Evan Carter, I feel like, is a little bit different because he was a god in October last year.
Right.
So not only has he succeeded at the big league level, but he succeeded at the most opportune moment. Langford, you know, it's all the potential in the world, and they're looking to find that area of weakness there, and the best players, they figure out what their weaknesses are and they drill it. And I think you mentioned recently about Mike Trout and fastballs. You know, Mike Trout all the time, pitchers find something and they start feasting. And it lasts for like a few weeks, and then he figures it out and he dares you to do it and, you know, does what he does, which is be one of the best players we've ever seen. And that to me is Mike Trout's greatest attribute, right? It's his ability to correct weaknesses in short periods of time and not allow himself to be exposed. And that's how we're going to know whether Wyatt Langford and Jackson Holliday, these two immensely talented baseball players, are going to be great ones. We think they're going to be, like, they've shown every sign that they're going to be, but big leagues is different. It is a different animal. And if you cannot adjust to your weaknesses, then the players on the mound 60 feet, 6 inches away are so good that they will absolutely prey on them.
That's exactly what Marcus was saying, for sure. And he just said to the younger, you're going to have to adjust. There's no getting around that. Every team is going to follow the example of the clubs that have come before. Aaron Judge got booed in Yankee Stadium. And I must say, you know, having covered the Yankees, when you get, you know, players who drop in from the outside, stars like Jason Giambi and Alex Rodriguez, they expect that they will be booed at some time. Derek Jeter, I heard, was booed early in his career. Mariano Rivera at one point was booed at Yankee Stadium in the middle of his career. But even in cast against those standards, I find Aaron Judge getting booed in Yankee Stadium when the team has started well. It's like, that's really silly. What was your take on that?
It's completely absurd, and it is entirely expected. And that's like, I mean, a 15-7 start, like, now this is coming from my perspective where I, you know, I thought the Yankees were going to be all right. I thought they were potentially going to be. I did not think they were going to start like this. I didn't think they were going to be there in lockstep with the Orioles. And I still think at the end of the day, Baltimore is a better team. But I look at what's happening with Aaron Judge right now, Buster, and the first thing I say is, oh, my God, imagine what it's going to be like when he gets going. Think about how good the Yankees are going to be then. Like, the fact that they are off to this start right now without him producing speaks to a depth that this team has that I frankly didn't think was there. And so will Aaron Judge? No, Aaron Judge will be just fine. And I don't know, maybe it's a rite of passage to get booed at Yankee Stadium. And maybe the boos are just coming from, you know, a small subset of people. But Aaron Judge could go and bat 180 for the rest of the season, as he has so far, and not warrant a single boo from Yankees fans for all the things that he has done. You would think that enough goodwill would be built up to give the man some patience, but patience is not, you know, patience is in short order in the Bronx. It's what happens when it's been a decade and a half since you won a World Series.
Well, how many home runs it took him, I think, until, I want to say it was April 29th, they had his second home run in the year that he had 62. Yeah. It was some crazy number where he had like one, I think it was one home run until April 29th, and then, of course, he went off, and at some point, that's going to happen. But even by Yankee fan standard, that was a little nuts. I want to ask you before you go about the piece you did on Corey Seager. Great piece. Get some insight into a guy who, as you know, I think he works from the Derek Jeter school of being intentionally boring when he talks to the media. He was not intentionally boring in talking with you. What were some of your takeaways?
It was really cool to talk with him because you're right. I until we sat down for this piece, I don't think I'd ever walked away from a conversation in a clubhouse with Corey Seager saying, well, that was really cool. Or I'm looking forward to using this information in a story. You say Derek Jeter, you know who it reminds me more of? I think it's more Chase Utley. Because remember, when Seager debuted, Chase Utley was on the Dodgers. And
right.
I think Chase Utley, who is a really, really bright guy and a really insightful guy and one of the smartest baseball players, I think, of the last 20 years, just in terms of his knowledge of the game and his understanding of the intricacies. And Chase Utley always saw the media, I don't know if it's as an impediment necessarily, but as something that was not going to be a value add to his time. And,
right.
Corey Seager is so single-minded when it comes to being great that I think he has regarded us as the same way. But let me run a theory by you that I think applies to a lot of players. Now, I'm curious if you, how many years have you covered baseball now? Got to be coming up. But if I'm at 21, you got to be coming up. Okay, so 35. I believe that when baseball players hit 30 years old, they constantly get more thoughtful and insightful and willing to not just talk with the media, but share things with the media. And my logic behind this is that when you hit 30, you realize, like, unless you're Justin Verlander or the very rare player, you're not going to be playing a game when your age starts with a 4. So you are on the other side of the proverbial hill at that point. You've also lived life long enough to have insight into what matters, into thoughts and emotions that you might not have been able to understand and to capture when you're in your 20s. Quite often players have kids. Like, there are a lot of things I think that make you grow up and want to share your knowledge or your thought process or your insight with the public a little bit more. And Corey Seager's turning 30 later this month, and almost as if on cue, he really opened it up, and I really appreciated that, because one of the great joys of this job is getting to understand how and why people who are great at things are great at things. How did you get there? And what allows you to be what you are? And the process is different for everybody. And in Seager's case, it was this place where, you know, the desire to have a swing without holes in it, or a swing that can't be beaten, meets up with fear of failure, which is a wild thing to think about a guy who has won two World Series MVPs and been Rookie of the Year and finished second in the MVP. We can go on and on about his accolades, but failure still chases him all the time. And understanding what that fear of failure does to Corey Seager as a person, I think, he opened up about it, and I found it to be fascinating.
Yeah, I agree with your theory 100%. The best example of that for me was Freddie Freeman, who's always been nice. Like, Freddie's always easy to talk to, but he never really done a long form interview of any kind. And, he agreed to do an E60. And the interview that I did with him, we were scheduled for an hour and a half, and he went on for 4 hours because he just fought through incredible emotions to talk about the death of his mother when he was a kid. It really was the most remarkable interview that I've ever done, and I don't know if he'll ever do it again. But the reason why he did it, I know from talking with his representatives at the time, was that he felt like, I want to get all this stuff on the record. Yep. And I want to, because at some point, by the time Freddie's done playing, his youngest kids probably will not really have had the opportunity to see him play. And so if he can tell those stories during that time, then yeah. But there are some players. I covered Cal Ripken for 2 years, and I have so many, it's not really regret, but I've always bummed about the fact that I couldn't tap into this incredible baseball brain because he was so guarded.
Yes. Yes.
He was Cal Ripken, and he was he was more powerful than any player in baseball. And he always asked the question, what's your angle? What's your angle? Right. And it was just like, he had a moat around really silly baseball questions because he was such a prominent figure. And man, I just knowing how smart he is. And to some degree, I guess I feel that way about Derek. But I just think Derek was just not that complicated in his thought process. He just knew when he walked on the field, he was going to get hits and he was going to beat you.
Exactly.
It really wasn't that complicated.
I think the example for me was John Lester. And John Lester, when he was in his 20s, John Lester went through a lot. I mean, John Lester beat cancer in his 20s. And it's not that he was guarded. I think it's that he was still trying to figure out who he was. And I think by the time he reached 30, he was very comfortable with who he was. And sharing that, was something that he was willing to do. And I loved talking with John Lester. I miss that guy. He was fantastic.
He was human truth serum. I mean, yes. I always said, when you talk to him, Jorge Posada was like that for me. He could not walk away from a question without telling you the truth, which is probably a dangerous place to be if you're a player. But some players people are just built that way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, Aaron Judge has been an exception to the rule. And maybe it's just that there is a level of stardom at which point it's difficult for you to do that. Judge is there. I think Cal was there. Though, when was the last time you talked with Cal?
I bumped into him from time to time. We didn't have a great relationship when I worked him as a beat writer. And I always would tell Tim Kirkchin, I always do tell Tim, You got Cal pre-Iron Man, which I was just jealous because Tim clearly was able to tap into this incredible baseball knowledge, which I just couldn't. I mean, any question in the 2 years I had him, when it was so much focus on him, he was just a hard wall to break down. Yeah. So you're right about Aaron Judge. That's the next big one because it's not only a moat, it's like walls and there's much built.
And here's the thing, there's insight there. And
yes.
There is, like, Aaron Judge is a very smart and very thoughtful person. And I think it may be one of those where we're just not going to get it until after retirement.
Or he has kids. Maybe that's his kids, you know? Maybe that'll change things. All right, Jeff, we're going to hear some of your Corey Seager interview coming up. Thanks for doing this.
Pleasure's mine, Buster. Thanks for having me.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Used with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting preventive.
We're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. In this clip, Jeff asks Corey Seager about hitting that home run in the World Series off Paul Sewald last year. And Seager gives an interesting answer. Give a listen.
Will you go back and watch video to see if you can, like, piece together any of it?
I watched it one time to know what I did, and I haven't watched it since.
Where were you when you watched it?
It was after the game. Okay. I got home and couldn't remember what happened. Like, I knew I got excited because I was fired up when I actually came back to it in the dugout, but yeah. I don't really remember, like, what I did.
So you watched it one time.
Yeah.
What were you feeling when you were watching that?
Embarrassed is the wrong word, but like, dang, man, you couldn't keep it together.
Wait, you wanted to be stoic in that situation?
Not that I don't like emotion, because I need people to be who they are, right? Like, the only way to get the best out of somebody is for them to be who they are.
Yeah.
And I love when adults and people like that get fired up, because it jacks everybody up, right? It gets everybody excited. And you need that, especially in the playoffs, but I just don't. Not show up people, but just like, I don't want to ever have, I guess, attention to what is going on to me, kind of thing.
Why is that you being a younger brother? Like, what's the psychology behind that? I'm kind of curious about that.
I think it's just my personality. It's who I am. I don't want to be in the spotlight. I don't want to be the person talking about.
See, that is so interesting to me.
Yeah.
You don't want to be in the spotlight, and yet that is where you do your best work.
And it's where I work. And so, yeah, kind of an interesting catch-22.
Yeah. How do you reconcile that?
It took a long time to get used to. Used to be super uncomfortable and just, especially away from the field, right, when people notice you, it was the most uncomfortable thing that could ever happen. It stopped leaving, like I stopped going out, like I stopped going to dinner. I just couldn't handle it. And then finally my wife kind of was like, we have to go out. Like, we're going to go out. It's going to be fine. Like, you're going to figure it out.
Here's Corey Seager talking about the empty feeling of being in a bad spot in a major league batter's box.
There is no worse feeling than being in a bad spot in a major league batter's box. Like, knowing you're in a bad spot and not being able to, like, compete, there's no worse feeling.
What does it feel like?
You're just by yourself. It's a empty, bad place to be. Like, you're just, you have no chance. These guys are way too good. Like, and nobody's coming to save you. So I enjoy that aspect of it. Like, not being in that, not headspace, but position and stuff like that.
Is it, God, that it's almost a backward way of having to think that you're trying to avoid something bad.
Yeah,
rather than find something good. Good.
Yeah, the fear of failure, for sure. Failure definitely drives me more than anything else.
Corey Seager talked to Jeff about how he practices his swing in a mirror.
So you'll work on your swing in a mirror?
Yeah, I do for every at-bat.
Really?
Yeah, every at-bat.
Where's the mirror?
Downstairs in our cage.
Do other guys do that?
That or the weight room. I go to our weight room.
Maybe I've just never noticed.
Yeah.
So every... Wow.
Yeah.
What are you looking for?
The angles and where I am and just set up.
Where did you pick that up? That's super interesting.
The mirror thing?
Yeah.
Just same thing as video, right? Like, I just want it in real time instead of having to, like, swing and then go look. And it goes back to what I was telling you about, like, August, I feel like I'm in a spot and I'm not, and the mirror does not lie, you know? It doesn't lie.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a Monday. You can call the Bleacher Tweets voicemail box at 406-404-8460. You can also email the show, bleachertweets@gmail.com. All of that information is in the show notes. We have a pair of upset Cardinals fans here, Buster. They want to play ombudsman. They want to submit a correction. So I guess we'll allow it. Here's the first one.
Hey, Buster. Hey, Taylor. Huge fan of the show. This is Barber from Connecticut. I was listening to today's podcast, and within the first two minutes today, you gave me reason to call in. You listed off your top three and then your bottom three, and you noted that it was a noteworthy milestone that the A's were not in the bottom three due to their series win over St. Louis. And I'm like, wait, what? Actually, the Cardinals won the first two games of that series and then dropped the finale. Love what you guys do regardless. Thank you so much, and take care.
We have to own up to when we're wrong, Buster. So I see that as a
counter. Oh, sure. Right, yeah, here. 100%. I was wrong on that one.
All right, next one.
Hi, this is Brian from St. Louis. Love the show, but with Whitey Herzog's death, Buster mentioned that he was a manager for the Royals. He never mentioned that he was a manager for the St. Louis Cardinals, that they won a World Series, but somehow he did manage to mention that the Yankees beat the Royals. So, again, a lot of Yankee talk, and I just think it's a shame that never actually mentioned the St. Louis Cardinals when you talk about Whitey Herzog dying. Again, still love the show, think y'all are great, but thought you should be aware. Thank you.
Yeah, it's funny on that one. And I thought about that because I saw I think someone wrote something on Twitter, and I felt like that mentioning like everyone knew that Whitey Herzog was with the Cardinals, and I should have said it more specifically at the beginning. But yeah, I almost felt like I was detailing additional details on top of the one that everybody knew, and that's totally my fault.
Oh, Buster, come on. Don't even apologize. What are we going to go through his whole biography?
I didn't mention that. And I was like, you know what? He's 100% right.
Wow, you felt badly.
Didn't mention the Cardinals. Oh, boy. He definitely is remembered first as a Cardinals manager. I have no problem with that criticism.
Okay. I was just going to, then the Yankee, the coastal bias there, jab at the end. I enjoyed that as well.
So. Yeah, I'm just acknowledging that I didn't mention the Cardinals, and the Cardinals are the team that he was connected with. And maybe it was because in the news, or when we did the news and notes, I just didn't touch on it.
All right. Sensitive Cardinals fans, just having some fun here. That's all the intention was there. Let's go to a couple emails. Anthony Torres, He writes, "Hey, Buster, I've been a listener for years now. The show has become an essential part of my baseball universe. Thanks, everyone, for working on it." His question is, what baseball theme 30 for 30 would you like to see that hasn't been done yet? Any era, player, or team? He'd love to see one on the 71 Pirates World Series team or the three-peat A's. 70s baseball. He's into that. What do you think?
Yeah, that would be fun. There are all kinds of, history. You'd love to get back into it. It would be fun for me as someone who covered the Yankees for 4 years, 98-2001, to go back and, you know, have conversations with players about that. But I don't think that would be a broader one. I think Aaron Judge would be in really, you know, Jeff and I were talking about how there's a moat around Aaron Judge. And it would be fun if at some point he were, you know, ready to talk out loud about the you know, his journey and, you know, being adopted and becoming a star player and being a star in New York and all that. He would be, because in that case, if he were to agree to do an E60, then he would basically be saying, okay, I'm ready to open up. And just like with Freddie Freeman, I thought that, once you got in there, he gave you some great stuff.
Liam Carnum writes, if you want to talk about great teammates, Tim Wakefield needs to be on that list. He gives a story about Wakefield demanding a pitch, going to Terry Francona's office.
Yeah, I don't think he demanded a pitch, but what happened was that their bullpen just was getting pounded, and they were getting pounded in game three. And so they would, you know, go down 3-0 from which a deficit from which no team had ever recovered. And Wakefield goes in, he's scheduled to start game four, and he goes to Terry Francona with the spikes, basically saying, I'm ready to pitch if we need to save the pitching staff for game four. So he essentially was saying, I want to save us for the Hail Mary coming back. That's pretty cool. That's a really fun story that Francona tells.
A couple tweets here. Corey Rukert writes in, does Adolis Garcia have the best oppo power in the game?
He could, man. He is a strong boss.
It's a big dude.
Yep.
So much fun to watch. Lucas at Lucas Cox 27. Colton Cowser does it again and again and again. We had to slip that in there. We talked about him earlier. With
Moo.
Jeff Moo, Brian Stone,
right?
King.
Exactly. A jersey, as long as it's a jersey Moo, I'm okay. At some point, I gotta ask him, you know, if I run across him, like, what do you imagine when you hear this? Is this a Holstein Moo? Is it a Brown Swiss Moo? I'm just hoping it's a jersey Moo.
Someone wrote, called in actually, it was a part of a bigger question, but they wanted to know your thoughts on Longhorn cows.
Look, they're mostly for beef, and I grew up on a dairy farm.
All right, there you go. Brian Stone King, he writes in, I still don't get the bullpen game. Why not just call up a AAA guy, hope for 4 or 5 innings, he'll get some experience, won't overly tax your bullpen. Plus, it won't be a signal of mailing it in for the day. No one has ever bought a ticket for that. That seems risky, Brian. I don't really co-sign that strategy.
Well, no, and I... You know, I just the sport with very few exceptions, and that it just so happens that the defending champion Texas Rangers are an exception. Most of the sport, they are now in this mode of we can make it up with 6 or 7 relievers. I had a really interesting conversation with Kirby Yates over the weekend about this. At some point, I might have to share his thoughts.
All right, last tweet here, Vershaw. This is really, we're a positive podcast for the most part, but Vershaw wants to know, how is Jerry Reinsdorf not getting talked about as one of the worst owners in sports? What's he done? What he's not only done to the White Sox, but also the Bulls, isn't being talked about. Justice for the Chicago Bulls, first and foremost, Buster. But yeah, we should give Jerry Reinsdorf his due.
Yeah. And I'd say this, and we've talked about Jerry, and that, you know, one of the great things about him as an owner is that he has incredible loyalty. And one of the worst things about him as an owner is he has incredible loyalty. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been times when he has not made changes when he should have made changes. And by the way, that's not just at the top of the food chain, but it's also in the clubhouse. It's, people in other jobs that you don't even think of. Right. I'm not going to get into specifically. It's not fair to do that. But just through the years, you'd hear about, yeah, so-and-so is still doing this for Jerry. And I think sometimes it's really worked against him.
Alrighty, that's it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. You can call us. You can email us. All that information is in the show notes. Quick shout outs: Ryan Hammer, Andre Foster, Caden from Northern California, Landon from Atlanta, Mr. Jakey, Todd Ransom, not Radom, Randy in Scottsburg, New York, and Cameron Black. Sorry about your Royals. Thanks, everyone.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Jakey. Maybe that's my son, right?
It is not. Mr. Jakey called in, and I'm pretty confident it's not your son.
Okay. All right. Well, that's it for today. My thanks to Corey Seager, to Jeff Passan, to Carl Ravitch, to Sarah Langs, and to Taylor for putting this all together late on a Sunday night. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something that we need to fight against every single day.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus chews.